The next case on our calendar is 05803, Cuyahoga County Bar Association versus David Wise. Mr. Wise, I understand you are going to argue your case. Is that right? You may begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. At this time, I would like to reserve half of my time for rebuttal, if the court should so please.
Put your time on the clock there.
Thank you. Your Honor, during the date in question, I was confronted with a difficult situation. I had been representing a client in juvenile court who believed, and nobody made an attempt to dissuade her otherwise, that she had a right to the immediate possession of her child. She left the court seeking to recover the child, and when she couldn't recover the child after almost 24 hours, she called me, hysterical, related that she was on her way to the police department to file kidnapping charges against who would later become her sister-in-law, a Cleveland police officer. At that point, I encouraged her and the other people that were accompanying her not to take any such action. I advised them to give me an opportunity to investigate the matter, related to them that I would get back to them immediately with my findings, and requested that they not do anything until they heard from me. I then called the Cleveland Police Department. I was hoping to ascertain whether or not Janelle Rutherford, the alleged kidnapper, was at work. Thinking to myself that if she was at work as a Cleveland police officer, she couldn't simultaneously be involved in some kind of kidnapping activity. I was transferred repeatedly. I was asked the purpose of my and nature of my call. I stated briefly and was transferred again. Finally, I was transferred to Sergeant Morales, who is Janelle Rutherford's immediate supervisor. I engaged him shortly in conversation, and soon it was apparent to me, because he had stated to me that after I had related the purpose of my call, that he was very concerned as well, because Officer Rutherford was not on duty and was listed as AWOL, and according to him, that was a very serious offense. So Sergeant Morales could not
make me. Excuse me, in your conversation with the sergeant, did you simply state that you were trying to learn whether she was at work or not, did you actually indicate to him that you believe she might have kidnapped the child?
No. My first words to him, I explained who I was, why I was calling, and I asked him if she was at work. He then asked me several questions. He was not forthcoming immediately with that information. So I answered his questions, and then he volunteered the statement that he was very concerned.
Did you ever, in that conversation, tell him that you believed she might have kidnapped the child?
I told him that my clients were concerned that she may have kidnapped the child or was involved in some kind of kidnapping activity, and that it was their intention to pursue the matter and to file criminal charges. I also told him at the time that our primary concern was to ascertain the whereabouts of the child and make sure that the child was safe. And I told him, even if in the heat of passion, Officer Rutherford may have done something inappropriate, I said, it's not my intention to pursue it. All we want to do is see that the child is safe.
Well, counsel, let's back up just to something that you said originally. Did you, at the close of the hearing, when the court dismissed the case, advise the client that they could now have their child?
Actually, it was Mr. Rutherford's counsel, Jihad Smiley, that advised him that he could pick up his child.
And you never said to your client to retrieve her daughter that
no.
She could do, even though that's contained in.
I think what I had said was that Mr. Smiley says you can get your daughter. I didn't say that myself. I said Mr. Smiley says you can get your daughter.
You told your client that?
Yes. Well, she was standing right there. Mr. Smiley was standing right next to me. So both clients were there, and the conversation.
Even though the court had said that there would be a referral to the Children's Services at that point.
Yes. Because at that time, the judge had indicated on the record that she was dismissing the case as a matter of law. She said she had no discretion. And all the parties at the time behaved and acted, and I behaved and acted as well, as though I thought that the case was dismissed and she had a right to her child. Nobody stood up and said, wait a minute, Janelle Rutherford's counsel didn't say, hold on, you can't do that. Everybody was terribly concerned. Janelle, who had lost custody, was hysterical.
And that leads me to my next question. Janelle had custody via the court up to that point,
temporary
correct?
Custody, yes.
Okay.
Well, it was actually by agreement between the parties during the pendency.
It was court-sanctioned custody of this child?
Yes.
Okay. Did you inform your client or try and work out a transfer of the child subsequent to the court's dismissal?
No, I don't believe that was even a possibility, because I don't think that there was no indication that Janelle Rutherford was interested in that.
All right. And then the next activity is you calling Sergeant Morales, and you said just a few minutes ago that the sergeant was concerned because Janelle Rutherford was AWOL.
After I talked to him briefly,
but in fact, she was on a family illness day, or, you know, she had taken a medical day that particular day.
That is what she said later, but at the time, I don't think that Sergeant Morales was aware of that. And I think that there was testimony that she had called in and she had communicated that she was taking a family sick day, and at the time, Sergeant Morales was unaware of that.
So technically, she was not AWOL until their personnel department, she and the personnel department, determined what her status was at that time.
I would think that you're correct, although at that time, Sergeant Morales told me that she was listed as AWOL. And he specifically said that was a very serious offense. Instead of being reassured by my conversation with Sergeant Morales, at that point I was even more concerned. And I then made attempts to get a hold of Janelle Rutherford's attorney, Douglas Blackburn. I talked to him, and I finally did receive the assurance that I was seeking. He told me that it was his understanding that until the judge journalized her order that his client had legal right to have custody of the child, that he was in contact with his client throughout this time, and it assured me that his client would obey all lawful orders and wasn't involved in any illegal activity. At that point, I returned a telephone call to my client and advised her of that, and I said, I'm not sure that he's right as a matter of law, but he might be. But anyway, he says he's in contact with her, that she's not involved in any illegal activity. He assures me that she's going to do the right thing. Therefore, I advise you not to pursue this matter by filing criminal charges. And in fact, they did not do that and ended up going home.
The panel heard, these are all facts, and obviously we have a record. The panel hears the facts, and we generally adopt the recommendation of the panel with respect to the facts. And didn't the panel hear from Sergeant Morales that he said Morales further testified that Wise stated he would call his good friend Bill Mason, the Cuyahoga County prosecutor, and report some kidnapping? I wouldn't want this matter to go to Bill Mason because I hear he eats his own. I'm certain Bill Mason would not want to hear about criminal conduct. And as a result of that telephone conversation, that Janelle was, her work status was changed as a result of that telephone conversation. What do you say to that?
Well, it's a very interesting point, and in fact, you are right. The panel did so find. However, there is no testimony in the record to support that finding. In fact, that particular finding was a parrot of the relator's closing argument, and it is not in the record.
So,
if you look at Sergeant,
when the panel's report says Sergeant Morales further testified that Wise stated he would, quote, call his good friend Bill Mason, so forth. That's not true?
No, that is not in the transcript, and I read it carefully again last night looking for it. Sergeant Morales never testified to that at the hearing, and yet the panel did find that as one of its findings and conclusions, but there is no evidence of that. Now, further, there is some attempt made to try to cast my behavior in calling Sergeant Morales as evidencing some malice towards Janelle Rutherford, a woman who before this I had never met, had no ill feelings towards, and that somehow I was motivated by a desire to do her some kind of harm at work. And I don't know how I could have known any of the things that I would need to know in order to form that intention. I didn't know if she was at work. I didn't know anything about the Cleveland Police Department's family sick leave policy. I didn't know that she had attempted or had successfully invoked it. I didn't know that she had a conversation with Sergeant Morales in which she indicated that she would be at work the following day and then never showed up. All of these things were beyond my ability unless I had some kind of psychic powers, which I do not have.
Did Attorney Blackburn, is there testimony in the record that Attorney Blackburn stated he felt that respondent was attempting to intimidate him by insisting that he, Wise, knew William Mason and so forth? Is that also not accurate?
No, there is testimony to that effect in the record from Douglas Blackburn, but not from Sergeant Morales. I can see that I've exceeded the time that I've set, so I will retire at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Wise. Ms. Mandel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Ellen Mandel, representing the relator. Mr. Wise has, again, misstated the facts to the panel and to this court. The panel did correctly find that Sergeant Morales testified that Mr. Wise intimated to him that Bill Mason was his good friend. And
deduct any time from your time for that.
Thank you. That Bill Mason was his friend and that he would be in contact with him and that he wouldn't take very kindly to the fact that a police officer was hiding or covering up for another
counsel,
police
are you
officer.
Saying that there is testimony to that effect?
There is. I don't think Sergeant Morales used the term good friend, but he did say that Mr. Wise told him that Bill Mason would not take kindly to a police officer covering up for the illegal conduct of another police officer. I believe the phrase he used was, Mr. Mason likes to eat his own.
Just so we understand their style, some of these statements are in quotes, and when something is in quotes, this is not your problem, it's the panel, is in quotes, we assume that that means it's actual testimony. Somebody actually said that, and we can go to the record and find that statement, but will we find the statement that I gave to Mr. Wise? It was
no.
In quotes?
I don't believe that Sergeant Morales used the term "good friend."
That's something we need to take care of then with our panels.
Okay. What Mr. Wise also has failed to acknowledge to this court is that his intention in calling Sergeant Morales was to impart to Sergeant Morales that Janelle Rutherford, a Cleveland police officer, was committing an illegal act, which, number one, wasn't true, and number two, was clearly intended to get her in trouble. It doesn't matter whether she was really on sick leave or not, which, in fact, she was, because the child was out ill. It doesn't matter that Sergeant Morales then changed her status to AWOL. It's Mr. Wise's intention that we need to focus on. And his intention here was to go after Janelle Rutherford. In fact, when the court announced from the bench that for statutory reasons, the competing applications of Larry Rutherford and Janelle Rutherford for custody of this child were dismissed, the case reverted to the status quo. This child had been with Janelle essentially since her birth. The court had made note that Katina McFadden, Mr. Wise's client, was totally unsuitable to be custodian, and that it was going to report this matter to the Child Services. On the 30th of January, when Mr. Wise made all of these phone calls to Sergeant Morales, to Douglas Blackburn, made all of these threats and innuendo, Erica Denson of the Department of Children and Family Services had already initiated that morning her investigation. She had already contacted Katina McFadden and Larry Rutherford. She had already started to prepare her affidavit, which was time-stamped later that day, and the complaint for emergency custody under the Abuse, Neglect, and Dependency Statute was filed on the 31st. So when Mr. Wise is making all of these phone calls, it's at a time when the Department of Children and Family Services has already contacted his client to open up an investigation. Everybody was aware of what was going on. The reason that the relator has filed objections to the panel's findings is not on the factual matters, but on the recommended sanction. The board adopted the panel's recommendation of a one-year suspension with 6 months stayed. The circumstances of this case cry out for a full-year suspension with monitoring afterward. This is a case where, in the underlying litigation and in the disciplinary process, the respondent has betrayed such a dislike, distrust, and contempt for the legal profession and the legal system that it's contagious to his clients and it's harmful to the public. In his own testimony, he stated that Judge Floyd in the juvenile court didn't know how to run a courtroom, didn't know the law, was totally incompetent. Doug Blackburn is lying. He's confused. He's being influenced by the child's guardian ad litem, who has a personal vendetta.
These are statements from Mr. Wise that we will find
correct.
In the record.
That's in the record. Everybody is at fault. The relator's counsel are engaged in a conspiracy to go after him for reasons unrelated to this case, none of which was proven, none of which is true. In the disciplinary process itself, he betrayed a complete lack of cooperation, such as I have never experienced in all of my years of doing this. He filed multiple requests to disqualify relator's counsel, starting as early as the probable cause finding and then repeating them several times, including the day of trial. He failed to file briefs that he was supposed to file. He accused counsel of improprieties. He accused witnesses of improprieties and lying, including a sitting judge. He subpoenaed multiple irrelevant witnesses who he didn't call and documents which he did not need and made witnesses sit in the hallway for many hours during that day. This was a 13-hour hearing because the relator indicated to the panel that he couldn't come back for the second scheduled day, so we went until 10 o'clock at night with virtually no break. When relator submitted stipulations to him, proposed stipulations, he not only didn't reply with an additional set or other set of stipulations, he failed to reply at all. His own testimony was dishonest. It showed a lack of candor. He refuses to acknowledge any responsibility for his misconduct, any violation of the Code of Professional Responsibility. The disrespect for the legal system alone is such an aggravating circumstance that I believe that this matter requires a full year of actual suspension.
Counsel, let me focus on the actual dates that were set, the very last set of dates, the two-day hearing. And my understanding from reading the materials is that there was a statement that he was in the emergency room, there was a medical emergency, and that precluded his appearance, and the panel was going forward then without him. Is that correct?
He appeared, I think, around 9:15 in the morning.
But the panel was prepared to go forward.
That is correct.
Without his presence.
That is correct. There was no medical information imparted to the panel, no demonstrated.
Was there at any time any proof given that in fact, there was a medical condition or that there was some reason for this attempt to delay?
There was no documentation provided to the panel.
Was it asked for?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I don't recall that it was or it wasn't. I think everybody took the relator at his word. It was only at the end of the day, around 9 o'clock, when Mr. Wise said, well, I have another witness I want to call. He didn't show up. I think that was Mr. Paul. It may have been somebody else. So I will bring him in tomorrow, at which point the chairman of the panel got quite incensed and said, we've been here all day because you said you couldn't come back tomorrow. We're going to finish this up tonight. Mr. Wise acknowledged that the witness really wasn't important, and we concluded the hearing with closing argument at that time. There had been a number of delays during the time period leading up to the hearing, caused by Mr. Wise, some of which had to do with family emergencies, some of which had to do with not being prepared, some of which having to do with, I think, some confusion between Mr. McGowan, his counsel, and himself as to who was going to be responsible for submitting a brief or preparing a brief or, you know, what he was prepared to stipulate to or what he wasn't prepared to stipulate to. So we came into the trial with no stipulations, nothing even as simple as the dates on which hearings occurred. And
counsel, was there any level of cooperation by respondent?
Not in my opinion and not in the opinion of the panel. It was a totally exasperating experience, again, such as I have never had, and it is the position of the relator that it is that kind of conduct, which we can impute back to the juvenile court case, but it's that kind of conduct that requires a more serious sanction than 1 year with 6 months stayed. We don't think that Mr. Wise has yet acknowledged his culpability, the fact that Janelle Rutherford was harmed, the fact that Katina McFadden, his own client, had he said to her, "Katina, you don't have the right to go get this child today." This is a very frail woman. She has a long history of substance abuse, drug dependency. She's lost other children to child welfare, to her first husband. This is a woman who, in testimony, you thought that she was a piece of crystal that was going to break. It is somebody that you treat very carefully, and had she been my client, I would have told her not to try and retrieve this child from the daycare. If there were arrangements to be made, it was to be made between counsel. And it was very clear from Mr. Blackburn that by virtue of the fact that he refiled his petition for custody the very next day, or the very same day, the 29th, and that the Department of Children and Services had started its investigation on the 30th and filed again on the 31st, it was very clear that Katina McFadden was not going to have possession of this child. And leading her to believe that she would was extraordinarily harmful, and Mr. Wise is solely responsible for that. It was within his power to say, you're not to go get this child. This isn't going to happen right now. Calm down. We'll deal with it. He didn't do that. And for that alone, he deserves to be sanctioned. And when you put that on top of the aggravating circumstance of his total scorched earth lack of cooperation, almost brutish attitude, I believe that the board has not imposed a severe enough sanction in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mandel. Mr. Wise, you've saved a little more than 4 minutes of your time.
Your Honor, there's so much, so many statements have been made by relator here that are not borne out by the record. I can only hope that the justices will actually take the time to review the record. I think the record speaks for itself and it speaks clearly.
I think we'll need to do that for sure.
Thank you. I would like to point out a couple of things, though. First, relator makes a big deal about the time, saying that at the time Katina McFadden and her later husband were aware of the investigation, that Children's Services was going to intervene. If you look at the record, one of the relator's own exhibits shows that the affidavit wasn't signed until 4 o'clock. My telephone call by telephone records was placed at 3:15. The relator has mischaracterized the testimony. Katina McFadden testified, and you'll find it in the record, that there was no telephone call placed to her, that she, in fact, did not know and was not aware. And Mr. Rutherford testified in the record that he was not made aware of Children's Services intervention until sometime that evening.
Isn't the real issue here the culpability that that is being alleged that you had made some interventions in an effort to interfere with the employment of the police officer. Do you recognize any culpability on your part in that respect?
Your Honor, I don't, because I don't.
You ever did that?
No, I would direct the court's attention to Relator's Exhibit 7, which is a statement contemporaneously made by Sergeant Morales, in which he details the basis for the discipline action that he took against Janelle Rutherford. I had nothing to do with that. I couldn't have known. He simply states that she was disciplined because she didn't show up as she promised when he talked to her on the 30th. He said, "Will you be to work tomorrow?" She said, "Yes," and she didn't show up.
Well, Counsel, didn't you contact her supervisor in order to intimate that there will be kidnapping charges against her for her activity with this child?
Absolutely not. I specifically did not do that. In fact, I was directed to her supervisor. I was told, if you want any information about a particular officer, you'll have to talk to her supervisor.
So you never mentioned to Sergeant Morales that you were concerned that this officer was involved in illegal activities, possibly a crime involving kidnapping of this child?
No. What I said was that my clients were concerned about that. Not that I wasn't concerned. In fact, I specifically told him that even if that were the case, I would not want that pursued. All I wanted to know is this child safe and is this child in a safe place? Now, I cannot substitute.
You could see, Counsel, how that might have been a little inflammatory given the situation here?
Except that I don't know what else I or a reasonable person in my position could do. If your client calls you and says, "I think that someone has kidnapped my child," and it's someone that they're related to and they know that person better than you, what should your response be?
Call the attorney first and say, "Let's arrange transfer of the child."
I could not get a hold of the attorney. In fact, I made an attempt to get him. He was out. I left a message.
So that gives you the freedom to allege kidnapping because you can't get a hold of
the attorney?
I did
not allege kidnapping.
It's sort of a distinction without a difference to say, "My client told me to say it."
I was trying to relate the urgency with which my client felt that the circumstances deserved.
But, Counsel, was there any urgency?
In reality?
Yes.
I don't know, but I
did. Counsel, was there any urgency here?
No. I do not believe that there was.
And you knew that at the time, that there was no urgency?
No, I did not know that because I had.
You thought a police officer was going to kidnap and harm a child, an officer that had custody of this child through a court order?
I thought that it was possible, and I'll tell you why briefly. I had another experience with a previous case earlier in my career in which little gray-haired grandparents whisked the child out of court and took that child overseas. I would have never thought that that was possible. I advised my client to allow the child to sit with the grandparents during the proceedings. How can I substitute my knowledge or belief about what somebody else is capable of doing when my clients are clearly agitated and they know the person and I don't?
Could you not have filed a motion with the court for an emergency hearing?
At that time?
Anytime.
Well, I suppose that I could, but if in fact my client's suspicions were correct, I think it would have been moot by the time the thing was heard.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Mandel says that she's been representing the Cuyahoga County Bar Association in these matters for some time. She says this is this is not a quote, but I took her to say that this was the worst case of non-cooperation by the attorney that she has seen. What's your response to that? Some of it's on the record, I guess, but I don't know how much of it is.
I guess I'm dumbfounded to hear that statement. First, I hired Mr. McGowan, who is a renowned criminal defense attorney. He's probably tried more cases than any attorney that I know. He represented me in this. He guided me. We consulted on strategy. He's the one that had the discussions regarding stipulations. He's the one advised me that I couldn't stipulate to the stipulations as proffered because they were admissions of guilt, which I had always denied. I think she's grossly mischaracterized what took place in terms of filings. They asked for the first continuance. I asked for continuance because my mother was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and she subsequently died shortly after these proceedings. This 3 weeks before her diagnosis, she was symptom-free, and in a few months, she died. I don't know what better excuse there is for a continuance. I understand Mr. McGowan asked for a continuance because his father was ill and in the hospital unexpectedly. I filed every single pleading on time, contrary to what Relator says.
Counsel, out of curiosity, why did you subpoena Bill Mason?
I subpoenaed Bill Mason. First, I was attempting to subpoena Ross Paul, who has also filed a complaint, a bar complaint in this matter, simultaneously with the complaint filed by Douglas Blackburn. I mean, they're stamped one right after the other. It was my belief, from what I had heard from other parties, that Mr. Paul, who worked at his GAL in the court, had spoken with Mr. Mason, had spoken with Mr. Draper, and I was hoping that I could get some testimony about that conversation. When I read Mr. Blackburn's complaint, I was incredulous. I had never heard of James Draper before. I didn't even know who he was. And here I'm accused of invoking a relationship with this man whom I had never heard of. It soon became apparent to me that Mr. Blackburn was confused because of his many conversations with Ross Paul, who had talked to these people, who did have animosity towards me because he'd worked for me previously, and I fired him. There were also other problems at the time. Mr. Blackburn testified, and you'll find this in the testimony, that he assisted Janelle Rutherford in attempting to work out the what he characterized as unfair discipline that was imposed upon her. He talked to her supervisors. He talked to other people in the department. Yeah, I'm assuming somebody talked to James Draper. Wasn't me. I never heard of the guy before. I picked up the complaint came in the mail, and I thought, James Draper, where'd they get this? I never heard of this guy before. So that's why I subpoenaed him, because someone was talking to him behind the scenes, and I thought that he could shed light on that situation.
You've used your time. Thank you, Mr. Wise. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Counsel are excused. We have an admission to the bar ceremony following this. There he goes.